Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm excited to be joined today by Rachel Barbeau, who is the founder of Changing the Narrative. Rachel, great to have you here on the podcast today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
You know, Rachel, the thing I like about AFCA is not only is it a time to catch up with a lot of the people and a lot of the connections who you probably haven't seen since the last AFCA, but it's also a time to meet new people. And you and I have talked before, but I never met you in person. And we had the opportunity to sit down and talk. And we were with Coach Bobby Acosta, good friend of both of ours, and, you know, had the opportunity to just talk about everything you're doing. And the last time you and I talked, you were in sports casting, did that for 17 years. But recently, you've stepped away from that to do this full time. So I guess for our listeners, if you could just give us a little bit of background on where you've been, as well as what you're doing right now with Changing the Narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. So for 17 years, as you mentioned, you know, I got out of school, went to Auburn, and my desire, my hope, and early on, and I talk about this in my talks with my movement, but, you know, all I wanted to be was a sportscaster. I wanted to be famous. I wanted my name in the headlights. You know, I wanted people to say, Rachel, Barbeau, you know, I wanted all the fame and the accolades. I was very me-centered. And, you know, as my career progressed, some beautiful, hard, wonderful things happened and met some people that changed the trajectory of my career. But overall, it was amazing. I mean, I was the host for the college football playoff from the kickoff, from the very first game there in Jerry's World. Until this last year, I was the first female host on SiriusXM on their collegiate channels about 5 years ago, which is something I'll take to the grave with me, put on my headstone. I was a Heisman voter as well, and it was amazing. And did a lot of radio, and it's very interesting. I was a sideline reporter for the ACC Network, number of other outlets throughout the years. But, you know, people would always say to me, "Oh, you're gonna make it one day, girl. You're gonna be on TV." And I was like, "Well, I have." But I choose to be on sports talk radio. One of the reasons I love, and I love still to this day, but I stepped away from it for this movement, as I'll mention in a moment. But I love radio, being a female in radio, because there's not a lot of them, right? And so, you know, being able to talk about a game, coaches, you know, concepts, X's and O's, players, all of those things for 3 hours, 4 hours, you know, sometimes solo. There's not a lot of women that can do that. And to be the first female host on SiriusXM on their collegiate channels, man, it's a torch I'll forever be proud of. And so, yeah, so I did that for 17 years, busted down a lot of barriers, and people ask me about that all the time. You know, that was never mine. I was just trying to keep a roof over my head and not eat ramen noodles, you know. And I remember years ago, about 2006, 2007, actually, it was one of my first radio shows, and I had a guy that called in all the time, and he'd say, "Girl, you don't know nothing about football. You ain't never strapped on a helmet." That's what it, I mean. It was just the, you know, redneck of rednecks in Georgia. And so because of him, I ended up going to training camp with my local indoor championship professional football team, the War Dogs, and they turned into the Columbus Lions, coached by Jason Gibson. And I went to training camp with them and lasted 5 days. 3 hours of football in the morning and 3 hours of football at night. I played wide receiver and DB. They tackled me. They almost broke me in half. I ended up getting medically released. The goal was never to play. But now when, you know, an antiquated man looks at me and says, you know, what does a girl know about football or a woman know about football? I can say, you know, listen, dude, I've actually played football. I've actually put on helmet pads, all that. It didn't fit right, but actually went through training camp. But I gave that all up. Because 3 years ago in 2016, I started a movement, and we've added an I to it to make it even more declarative. So it's I'm changing the narrative. And I recognized in the summer of 2016, if you remember the news cycle, Coach, during that time, it was on the heels of Penn State. It was Baylor. There were domestic violence, sexual violence. There were guys getting in trouble across the country. No program was immune to it. And so I just thought, man, we could do something about this. And I thought, what if we started to take back the headlines for good, for positive? What if we started to change the narrative instead of if it bleeds, it leads, it's something good? And so I just created this movement. I thought at first that I would go into high schools, but then my friend Kevin Elko, who supports Nick Saban and now coming up PJ Fleck and a number of top-level coaches, he said, hey, listen, Jimbo Fisher wants you at FSU. And so that was August of 2016, and I've now been into 40 programs across the country with my methods, from Oregon, Alabama, Auburn, Texas A&M, Rochester, SIU, Minnesota, Michigan. The list goes on, and it's been nothing short of miraculous.
And it's, you know, something I've seen really grow for you just in the last, I don't know, we talked maybe 6 months ago before the season. And I think a lot more awareness about those issues and the mental health issues as well. We've talked about those a little bit here on our podcast. Definitely haven't had an episode focused on those things or really talking in detail about those things, but that's also something that you've been heavily involved with and are passionate about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how that came up, so here's the maturation process of the talk. So first of all, why it works, because I've had people literally ask me, and I know there are guys that are skeptical out there that are listening to the podcast, say, I mean, a room full of 100 guys going to listen to this chick, you know, what's she talking about? And listen, I get that too. You know, I get from my players, my kings, as I call them, and I'll explain that. They'll say, I just thought you were another person in here that was going to point their finger at me and preach at me. And they said, no, you lifted me up. You called something great out of me. You told me you believed in me. And so the maturation process of this talk, it's all based on my life, because my life has been crazy. It's been horrific and happy and sad and monumental. I've been to the top of the world at Kilimanjaro for my friend Kevin Turner and ALS, who played for the Patriots and the Eagles and lost his valiant battle with ALS. I've been drug across the house by my hair by somebody who claimed to love me. And so the talk is based on my life, when I was fame hungry, what I was thought I was, you know, chasing, and what it wasn't, it was empty. It wasn't good. And so we talk purpose, passion, platform. And then later on, we started to adopt how to be a king every single day of your life, how to look in the mirror and be proud of the man that's staring back at you. And then along the way, this last year, Coach, I'd say calendar year, I started to, and I always do this, but I started to hear more and more from my kings, because I stay afterwards, I stay in touch with them. We, you know, they give my Twitter and vice versa, so they have a safe place to DM me. I've been to King's weddings. I've gotten pictures from the delivery room. I'm in their lives. I'm long-term. I'm not a speaker that leaves. But I recognize they're telling me I'm unhappy. I'm depressed. I was going to kill myself. I can't tell anybody. And here, take note, coaches, please listen to me. Big school, small school, this is what they tell me. Three things. They're the exact same thing no matter where they are. I don't want to be seen as weak. I don't want to lose my scholarship, and I'm afraid to lose playing time. And so particularly men, stuff that's passed down generationally, are afraid to talk about their struggles. And because of that, we've got suicide that's it's an epidemic and record numbers, and we're losing guys, and we can't afford to lose anymore. And it's not just suicide. It's every day. And so, yes, the talk took on a major emphasis on mental health. And I think so much so, Coach, because of the fact that I had my own dark night of the soul. I lost my mother in May to cancer. And that summer, nothing was going right. You know, my money, my relationships, I lost my mom. I felt very, very, very low. And on top of it, I was sleep deprived. That's why I think it's so important for coaches to be really cognizant of sleep and nutrition. And all those things combined the perfect storm. And I heard voices telling me to kill myself. And then when the voices wouldn't go away, they were visuals. And there were whispers. And finally, I passed out. And I woke up the next day, and I was just so weak and tender from what I had been through. I'd been through a battle. And I decided about a week later that if I'm asking these players to take off the mask and get real and to destroy this idea of perfect in comparison, then I needed to get real too, Coach. And when I started talking about it, my own dark night of the soul, it ripped down every wall, every defense, and these young men across the country, big school, small school, were walking up to me after this talk and saying, I was going to drive my truck off the road today. I was so despondent. Another young man, I had a noose around my neck, had the chair underneath me, and was about to kick it out when a mosquito bit me in the forehead, and I took it as a sign, and I took the noose off. Or I've taken the pills, or I've cut myself. I mean, and when you, and this is the message, when you get real, and this is what I want coaches to know, when you get real and take off your mask and tell the things that were meant to kill you, but actually were a blueprint for you to be able to save other lives, it invites, encourages, and gives others courage to be able to take off their mask and tell you what they've been going through. And that is more than anything, my message to coaches.
Rachel, as you talked about that, I think as coaches, I guess some of it is about wearing that mask, about this whole idea of what we're supposed to be as football players, what's part of our culture. And, you know, I remember back to a coach we had on the podcast who's done a phenomenal job. He's at Ben Davis High School in Indianapolis. Now he's at Mount Vernon. And he talked about a night he would do with his seniors where he'd have them over their house and they would talk real. And things like that would come out, and they'd learn things about each other. They had stories where a player shared that kind of, you know, of challenge in his life, that, you know, he faced those things, that he had those trying times like that. And, you know, I commend Coach for doing something like that. It's not easy. I could say, you know, that's probably 99% of us as coaches either don't feel secure in having some kind of a session that brings that out, or we kind of lack the training, the knowledge. You know, how do you handle those kinds of things? How do you, number one, I guess, create and open a dialogue that does it? We always talk about really the relationship side of this. And you'll hear every coach who comes on this podcast, you know, who's been successful, mention that part of it, that it's about those relationships. Yet at the same time, I would say, that, and I think you agree, that we don't get into that area of things. We stay away from it. We leave that untouched. And, you know, I know that there's kids out there who can appear on the outside to be very physically strong, actually look very mentally strong, and then deal with some of those things internally.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the young man from Florida that was going to Georgia Tech is a perfect example of that. I think his name was Bryce. And I've reached out to his coach there at Florida, at his high school in Florida, and offered my services to go speak in my online program, which I'll talk about later. But, and I'm also going to go speak at Georgia Tech. But here's what I want to say. It is scary. It is uncomfortable. I don't necessarily know what I'm doing. You know, I'm not a therapist, but you lean on therapists. You reach out to your school. You reach out to your principal. You reach out to your administrators. And you say, hey, listen, I need some, you know, I need our school therapist, our school psychologist on call. Should we have somebody who opens up and says these things, right? I'll be honest with you, really, really brutally honest. You know, after I had my own dark night of the soul, I didn't just go share it the next day. I wrestled with it. I had on one shoulder this voice saying, you'll be seen as weak. You'll be seen as broken. You're defective. You're an F up. You're a failure. No one will ever book you to speak again. Your message is ruined. You got to carry this like a cross for, you know, it was a terrible voice. And the other voice on my shoulder said, no, you tell them you're a warrior. You're a survivor. And you need to tell others so they don't feel ashamed of what they've been through. See, depression and anxiety and dis-ease, all these things, it makes you feel like you're alone. It makes you feel like you're broken. Depression a lot of times will make you isolate. That's my poison. I isolate. And so, you know, it's not easy. It is not easy, but we have to take that next step. Here's the reality, Coach. These cell phones, social media have never made us more connected, but we've never been more disconnected in our entire lives. We're talking about our clothes, our body, how much we benched, our 40 time, but we're not talking about somebody's soul. what's going on deep down in their soul. And oftentimes, as coaches that are listening to this podcast, they're playing for you and going home, and you have an inkling of it, and bless you. I say, because I know these coaches, you want to be a dad to everybody. You want to save them all, but you only have so much bandwidth, and then you have your own family. But we don't know what they're going home to. We don't know if mama's hitting daddy, daddy's hitting mama, somebody's hitting the bottle. We don't know, you know, if there's verbal abuse. We don't know what's going on at home. And so I tell college coaches, oftentimes these young men are, we call it funky junk and changing the narrative, but oftentimes these young men are arriving on your campus with massive amounts of funky junk, shame, guilt, anger, unforgiveness, abuse, molestation, you know, mental issues, have no idea about self-care, no idea. There's a whole part of mental health that has nothing to do with depression, anxiety. It's the time before that. What do we do to take care of ourselves to make sure we don't get there? And so I would just say it's hard. And I'll tell you a very quick story. This is how I know it's hard, because PJ Fleck has become a dear friend of mine. He's an early believer in my program. He's had me in every year, and he just allowed me, he and the Minnesota brass there allowed me to host the first ever mental health game between Minnesota and Maryland. Coach Locks is another one of my teams as well. I'm a good friend. But in August before the game, and we didn't even know we were doing game at that time, I went to visit, and Coach always asked me, you know, what's the theme this time? And I said, take off the mask, destroy perfect. And this was, you know, my dark night of the soul was July, mid-July. And this is, I finally decided I was going to start talking about it. I walk in there and did a full-on talk for 45 minutes about mental health. And it wasn't clinical. It wasn't by the book, because I'm not a therapist. I call myself a street therapist. My goal is to get them to go to therapy. My goal is to get them to open up, right? And so I did this talk, Coach. And at the end of it, I held up a microphone. And I bared my soul, and I put all my junk out on the table. And I held up the microphone, and I said, if anybody wants to take off their mask, much like the coach you told me about a moment ago, if anybody wants to take off their mask and get real with their teammates, then, you know, you do it, right? And so I hold up this mic, Coach, and I'm holding it. And I felt like it must have been 20 minutes, you know, I'm like, dun, 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 dun. You know, my heart is like going a million miles an hour. In reality, it's probably only a minute. But everybody's shifting. Everybody's looking at one another. You know, nobody's going to talk. And I'm like, you're about to look like a fool, Rachel. You're about to look fool, but you got to put yourself out there. And then all of a sudden, one young man in the back grabs the microphone, and he revealed some very revealing stuff. And then the most beautiful, amazing thing happened. Another young man grabbed it. And then another young man grabbed it. And another young man grabbed it. And we ended up being in that meeting for like an hour 30, an hour 45. And I held it up at the end, and I said, if anybody one last time wants to share something, we don't want to leave here without you getting on the table. And the things I will never tell, because it's in the sanctity of that meeting, but the things that were revealed in that meeting were heart, like deep, like whoa kind of stuff, right? And you saw what Minnesota went on to do. And I think that there was an element of that in the success, that they bled, they sweat, they cried together, and they revealed. They took off the mask. They got real with each other, Coach. They told each other, not the happy, not the, hey, dude, what's up? Yeah, I see you on social media. Click, click, like. What's going on? I see you in the weight room. They got real. They unloaded their funky junk, so they watched film better. They played freer. There was something to that. And I talked to the incoming commissioner of the Big Ten, and he said, yeah, there's something else. It's not just the change of the turf. Something special is going on at Minnesota, and I'm just so fortunate to have a tiny part of that. But I illustrate that, like your friend that you mentioned, because listen, you get real and it invites change, radical change.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, especially the tie to PJ Fleck, and we've seen, you know, PJ really turn Minnesota around quickly, and, you know, they had a historic season. Just a few weeks ago, we shared keynote that PJ gave at our national conference a year ago. And, you know, he talked about that culture, the culture they're building. And he said, you know, it's the twos, T-O-O's, like too, you know, too small, too slow, too dumb, those kinds of things, mentioning like that he had an 18 ACT and, you know, that he found a way to overcome that. And, you know, he didn't necessarily think that Minnesota was just going to be made up of all, you know, five-star, four-star recruits, and that, you know, they were going to build a culture, though, together. And to me, this seems like, you know, Coach is not only doing all the things that everybody else does on the surface, but he's made an effort to really make sure that they are taking care of that full individual, that it is, you know, mind, body, and spirit.
I was really proud of Coach Berry. I still call him Coach Berry. Todd Berry, the AFCA. I was really proud that they chose him to be the opening speaker, because there's something special. You look at LSU, you look at Minnesota. Let's just look at those two programs that had so much success this year. And Coach O, another one of my teams, by the way, very proud, lots of pride in those boys, in those Kings. And they talk about it. And what Coach O says is, he says, character, character, character. It's all about the character. They chose to do good. Doing good is cool. I can't do a good Coach O impression. It's my best one. And I love him, by the way. But PJ and Ed, they've got something cooking in the gumbo that's different than a lot of people. And it does. It's the love. It's the care. It's the concern that they have for their players. It's the culture. It goes beyond X's and O's. And it's getting to the heart and the soul of the Jimmys and the Joes. And I'm telling you, you know, here's one thing that I hear a lot from coaches. I hear, when I played football, sir, with all due respect, 40 and older, 35 and older, it's not like when you played football. You don't walk off a field, pick up a phone, and somebody tells you to kill yourself if you didn't have a good game, right? You don't have this thing that is attached to you, this phone that's got, you know, instant access to the good, the bad, the happy, the sad. You're not 24/7 connected. You're not reading in real time what people are saying about you. You know, you're not, my gosh, we're not online and have situations where young people are being goaded by other young people to take their lives. It's just not like when a man of a certain age played football. So yeah, you're right. What is PJ doing? What's Edo doing? What's a lot of these guys doing? It's that extra step, right? It's that extra. And here's the I feel like, and it's why I skipped the national championship and had a credential and could have been on the sideline for my Kings at LSU. But I thought it was important to get the AFCA, because I can say all I want to say till I'm blue in the face, Coach, that actually it's you know, this idea somehow has been passed down. I say this in my talk. I say, I'm not mad at your granddaddy. I'm not mad at your granddaddy's granddaddy's granddaddy, your uncle's uncle's uncle. But a lot of times in a lot of homes, it's been passed down generationally that to be a man and to be masculine, to be manly, you need to suck it up, shut up, man up, put some dirt on it, and keep moving. And so what's happening with our men is men feel like they can't express themselves. If they're going through something, it's not manly to ask for help. And I tell men, it's the exact opposite. You have never been more strong. You have never been more masculine. You have never been more attractive. As when you say, I don't have it all together. I don't have tools in my toolbox. Right now, I feel so angry that I can't control myself, and I may cross the line and put my hands on somebody. These are all, it all plays together. And so the reason why I went to the AFCA, Coach, is to say to the coaches, I can teach your young men these principles. I can change their mind. I can encourage them to darken the doorways of your therapist, and they're going to be better football players for you. But if they go back and you have a position, Coach, or it's you yourself that has not dealt with your own funky junk, or you tell them they're a P word, or you tell them they're weak, or you tell them to get their you-know-what back on the court, I don't care what you're going to, and you're not evolved yourself, it's for naught, right, Coach? And so it starts with the top down. We have to change the mindset of our coaches to actually have success and stop having, you and I were at the AFCA, another young man killed himself. And so if we don't start from, and that's why I skipped the national championship, if we don't start from the coaches down, it's not going to work. And it works. I have thousands of Kings across the country that said, I've gotten help, Miss Rachel. I've gotten help. I'm better. I'm doing good. Thank you. Thank you. But if a player in high school or college or wherever it is going back to a coach, and I'm not attacking. I'm saying, because I've been somebody who hadn't dealt with my funky junk at one time in my life, and it's a continual rinse and repeat every single day. It's a continual battle to stay healthy in that regard mentally. But if you haven't dealt with your own stuff, you're inadvertently passing it down to your players, or maybe somebody on your team, one of your coaches, is doing this to one of your players. And God forbid, I don't want anybody to lose another player. I don't want anybody in the country to lose another player to suicide.
Well, Rachel, I'm sure, number one, I saw you hustling at AFCA, definitely, meeting coaches, talking to coaches. And it certainly now, I think, adds some credibility to what you're doing, that PJ and Ed have had you in and you work with their teams. But I'm sure you're still met with a lot of skepticism. Let's face it, there's a lot of tradition in football, and some of it good, some of it bad. I guess, you know, for those coaches who are either skeptical of this or maybe not even sure how to open that door, because I think that's, as you said, that's what you're doing. You're opening this door. So potentially they, you know, you do not claim to be a therapist. That's not what you're doing, but you're helping them open these doors so that they can either help these kids with their issues or send them to get help with their issues. Number one, the skeptic, how do you address that? And then number two, for the coach who wants to be able to open that door with his players, how?
Yeah. First, to the skeptic, I would say this. I've had 3 middle of the night suicide phone calls from players. Thank God none of them followed through and took their life. I was able to get them help immediately. We have a psychologist, a psychotherapist that consults with changing the narrative. And then at first dawn, we called the school, made the school aware, and got them help. And they're all thriving and doing well. So, you know, I don't know why they called me, but they do, and they trust me. Okay, so there's that. Second of all, there's just too many success stories for it not to have worked, right? There was a one young man that after my talk said, "Miss Rachel, you said kings do hard things. And a king is not somebody who's perfect. I'm a queen. At one point, I wasn't a queen, coach. I didn't love myself. I was trying to fill holes that I had from daddy issues with things of the world. And I was broken. And a king or a queen is somebody simply who's not perfect, but can look themselves in the mirror each day. I'm not talking about, you know, my eyebrows are okay, do I have nose hairs? You know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about deep in your soul and be proud of the person that's staring back at you. When you lay your head on your pillow at night, you know that you have done the right thing. You rectify wrongs. You are accountable. You lead, you serve, you give. You are extraordinary. And so I call them to be kings. And the most, I've had this decorated career, and nothing compares, I say this, than calling somebody by their rightful name, king or queen, and watching their soul rise up to it, right? And helping them understand that while you're very talented in football or whatever sport it is you play, that's not what you, why you're put on the earth. It's a platform for you to be able to change somebody else's life. What are you going to do with it, right? And so there's just too many success stories, I would say, to the skeptic. I would say, like I said, it's a different time, like I mentioned earlier. One young man, as I mentioned, he called me and he said, "Miss Rachel, you said kings do hard things." After your talk, I picked up the phone and I called my deadbeat dad and I told him I forgave him. And he said, "I didn't want to be anything like him." And he said, "I found myself in a lot of ways turning out like him." And he said, "So after your talk, I just picked up the phone." And he said, "I feel like a 2-ton weight was lifted off my chest, and I can now be the man that God created me to be." And, you know, that young man started watching film more intently. He started playing freer, right? Because he doesn't have the funky junk, the ideas bouncing around his head, the depression, the anxiety, the homesickness, the whatever's going on. He feels good about himself. He's happy. He doesn't have shame, guilt, anger. You know, he looks in the mirror. He is not holding on to resentment. That stuff weighs you down like an anchor around your soul. So that's what I would say to the skeptic. And then for somebody who wants to get in touch, and listen, don't take it from me. Call one of my 40 head coaches across the country that have endorsed this program and had me in multiple times over and over and over again. Call head coaches' wives. You know, you call commissioners, and they'll vouch for this program. And I'm amazed. I'll tell you that. I'm continually amazed. I don't know why I get to do this. I don't know why they trust me. I don't know why. But I'm thankful. I'm so, so thankful. And so to get in touch, they can go to I am changing the narrative.org and hit the contact button. about speaking. But the coolest thing that I did, and I worked for an entire year on it while my mom was sick, is I said, I can't be at every high school. And I want these young men to be more well-rounded. And I want to help the coach that I know wants to, has got so many young men on his roster that need him. And he just didn't even have the emotional bandwidth to be a daddy to all of them. He's trying to daddy his own family. And I just admire coaches so much because they play so many different roles to a young man. And so I said, what if I created everything that I'm doing in colleges and put it on demand and short little videos, 5 to 7 minutes. There's a workbook. There's an 18-page workbook. There's resources there. If somebody is feeling suicidal, feeling depressed, they can find a therapist. There's a discussion board. There's an opportunity at the end to become a Change the Narrative ambassador. We send you clothing and you go out and do something wonderful in the community. And so I just said, why don't I do this for high schools? And it's just athletes and non-athletes, okay? It doesn't have to be for your football players. Everybody, every male in a high school can use it. And so that's what I did. And so you can go to traintobeaking.com, traintobeaking.com. And you can find all of this on imchangingthenarrative.org too, or my socials, which is Rachel Barbeau, RachelBarbeau. And it's this movement. I wouldn't have walked away from a 17-year career. I wouldn't have walked away from sportscasting, but I know this is my calling, and I know we're saving lives.
And Rachel, I want to end just with a quote that I found in an interview with Coach Fleck. And he said, it's one thing to have speakers every year, Fleck said. It's another thing to have topics every single year come up, but have the same speaker talk about them in a very different way. Where then I feel like our players have a relationship with that person. They can text that person. They can come to that person. They will open up more to that person when they're speaking to them. Rachel has done that. She has reached to the hearts of all our players. And, you know, I think it takes a lot of courage for any coach to open up their program to outside people, to outside influences, but to embrace the fact that, you know, maybe they can't handle all those things on their own. And I think that's what you've done a great job here putting together. And again, I encourage coaches to check that out. I think at the very least, it'll open your eyes to some things that can be aware of and look for and even address and hopefully help some of your players. So Rachel, I thank you for taking the time here again on the podcast, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Hey, thank you. Listen, thank you for being a coach and for being someone in this profession that embraces this. The saddest thing that I hear, and it's not very often, it's very rare now, but I hear somebody say, we've got this handled. We've got this. You know, I sure hope you do, right? Like, I sure hope you do. So I'm just so grateful. And I welcome a skeptic. I welcome the opportunity to turn somebody into a believer. I tell them these stories, and I tell them these stories of success and these kings that are thriving and treating their girlfriends better. And the one king that called me and said, Miss Rachel, I need help. I am so angry over being injured that I am one step away from putting my hands on my girlfriend, and I do not have the tools in my toolbox to be able to control myself. Can you help me? Maybe I need therapy. Do you know, I just cried like a baby that day. I was like, man. Because you think about, Coach, you think about one situation, right? He crosses the line because he can't control his anger, puts his hands on his girlfriend, loses everything, automatically labeled an abuser because he didn't have the tools in his toolbox. And it's as simple as that. And I thank Coach Fleck for embracing me and saying, you know what? She's got a story. They listen to her. They love her. And I'm just so thankful. And I'm thankful to somebody like you who would have me on the podcast and believe in me. Thank you, friend.
You're welcome, Rachel.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.